This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, Rosanna. Good morning. Look, while it can be argued that this law affects, it can be argued that what affects Muslim majority Malaysia has an effect on all of us. Some people say that non-Muslims need not be part of this conversation because the law, as it's now kind of conceived, will not affect them. Is this an issue only for Muslims?
Thank you for the question. Definitely, where we see is that, you know, when it comes to any laws, even including Islamic laws, where it says that it only affects Muslims, so far we've found that not to be true, because definitely non-Muslims will be impacted directly or indirectly.
But what about the question of Muslims themselves? Are they united in their view on the implementation of Hudud?
I think it's the opinion is quite divided. You know, not everyone is in agreement on the implementation of Hudud in Malaysia. Although, you know, some states have been pushing for this for quite some time, but in relation to the public's view, it is still quite divided, and it's still something that people are still discussing.
Well, so, okay, now we have a landscape where we have Muslims who are for it and Muslims who are not for it, and presumably, I don't know if non-Muslims in Bayasab assume that non-Muslims would not be for it or would be agnostic. What is the real problem with this particular amendment? I mean, what will it bring about that would, in fact, be problematic for those segments of the Muslim community?
Okay. This particular bill, you know, what it does is to extend the powers of the Sharia court in relation to punishment. Now, when this was presented in May, what was presented to us, it says that, you know, that the Sharia court would be able to mete out any punishment without any limits, so it can mete out any punishments with the exception of the death penalty. Now, there has been denial at the time that this has nothing to do with implementation of the Hudud law. But after the pronouncement, you know, there was also a welcoming statement by the past leadership. Even this bill in the first place is mooted by, it's a private member's bill mooted by the MP of Marang. It was denied that it has anything to do with the implementation of Hudud. But following that, there was the past youth chief who welcomed the amendment of this act, saying that it will ultimately pave the way to implement the Hudud laws in Malaysia.
Now, there are, of course, people who support it who say, well, not all that these laws will not be applied on the Federation as a whole, but this is only limited to Kelantan. So, again, trying to kind of reassure the public, trying to reassure non-Muslims, trying to reassure parties that are part of the Barisan National Coalition that this is not going to change the fabric of Malaysian society. This is merely about letting Kelantan, which and its population, which has supported the past government all these decades, that they can get what they've asked for in a democratic fashion. They've asked for Hudud, or at least they've voted in a government that wants to push through Hudud. Could you give us a bit of that history? Kelantan passed an enactment in 1993 that would have allowed for Hudud to be implemented in that state. Is it? What do we understand about that history?
In relation to when that bill was passed, you know, there was a lot of resistance, particularly from the NGOs as well from the government of the day itself, the federal government. The position was very, very clear that these were the kinds of punishments that it deemed that it was not suitable for a society such as Malaysia, which is multi-religious, multicultural, and multiracial. And definitely it will, you know, that one of the other concerns particularly is in relation to how it would impact on women's rights. Because in this case, you know, under, you know, implementing Hudud law would mean that the law that was passed, you know, did not allow for women to provide evidence. A single woman, you know, who is pregnant, you know, that would already be regarded as evidence that she had engage in illicit sex. And if she needed to protect herself and to deny this and to say that she was raped or molested, now she is the one who would have to bring in four witnesses to prove that she wasn't part, you know, this act wasn't, it wasn't a consensual act.
Well, that seems on the face of it quite an impossibility, seeing how if she could have four witnesses to her own rape, they would have, you know, stepped in and perhaps prevented it. What other problems do you foresee with this? I mean, is there a possibility of increased religious policing, especially on the question of private morality and also the question of compulsory piety, by which I mean, you know, people needing to go to prayers on Friday and such?
Well, now, in the first place, we also need to understand that, you know, once if this bill goes through, right, now it is upon each and every state to then create, you know, and agree within the state in terms of, you know, how, to what extent they want to increase the punishments within the Sharia courts. Now, this would also create a situation where you will have different states meting out different levels of punishment or different maximum sentences for Sharia offenses. So in, on the one hand, you know, if Kelantan goes ahead, you know, to use this to be able to implement the hudud law that it wants, you know, then, you know, you'll have a situation where it will be able to implement, you know, the 100 lashings and so on. For
amputations included?
Sorry?
Amputations included?
Amputations included as well. But, you know, if there are other states that do not meet out, you know, that do not want to implement or do not pass the law to have these maximum sentences, so you will have, you know, a situation of, you know, different kinds of punishments and different kinds of justice for Malaysian citizens in different states.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned the other states because I think one of the arguments being made by supporters of this private members bill, like you said, the MP of Marang, because it's Hadi Awang, who is the president of PAS, is that, you know, it's going to stay in Kelantan. Whereas, you know, we interviewed Chandra Muzaffar, head of the One Malaysia Foundation, and he says, well, in fact, this will open the floodgates. There will be pressure on other states, especially as politicians who are practicing Muslims will feel pressured in sort of extending hudud and saying yes to hudud. If it can happen in Kelantan, then they have no, as it were, protection, or they don't have no excuse, rather, not to to support hudud in those states. I mean, do you see the floodgates opening?
I do agree with the views that Professor Chandra Muzaffar has on this matter, because, you know, in the first place, who would want, you know, hudud laws to be legislated? It would be those who feel strongly about it, and if this is something that the lawmakers are pushing, and they feel pressured by other states that are already implementing this, I mean, if this is the standard for Islam, ultimately, you know, I think the view is that, you know, what is the standard of Islam, you know, for Islam, you know, and most people see that, you know, until and unless the hudud law is implemented, we cannot call or claim Malaysia to be an Islamic state. And this is what a lot of people want to be, this is what they believe and believe in, and this is what they want. But, you know, this has not been the way how Malaysia has been created and how it has been shaped. You know, that there are so many, you know, diversity, there's so much diversity within our society, you know, and this is something, you know, we're not in the Middle East where, you know, it's like 99% Muslims and, you know, 1% non-Muslims, you know. We're talking about a significant minority percentage who are non-Muslims. And at the end of the day, you know, don't forget that 50% of Malaysian citizens are also women, you know, and you're accounting when it comes to giving evidence in relation to the crimes that have been committed, you're already omitting about, what, 70, 75% of the population.
Now, Rosanna, last question. Some people argue that, you know, whatever the historical and social conditions or context, this ultimately is about democracy. If we believe in democracy and we have democratically elected members to parliament and they choose to support this bill, isn't that just part of the democratic game?
Yes, I agree that it is, you know, part of democracy, but we should not also forget that we have a federal constitution, you know, and how that federal constitution was crafted and designed, you know, to be, you know, one, it is a supreme law of the land, you know, and it takes into consideration the fact that, you know, we are multi-religious and multicultural and multiracial, and that is something that we cannot ignore. And I think, you know, in relation to how the world is moving, you know, I think there are so many issues that needs to be addressed in relation to social issues, family issues, and this would really only create further difficulty and hardship for families, for individuals, you know, who hope to get justice, but ultimately, you know, will justice be served at the end of the day in the name of Islam?
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.